I'm Reverend Lisa Day, minister of the Unitarian Universalist Church of Savannah. Welcome to our weekly radio program, where you'll hear a segment from one of our recent services recorded at our church on beautiful Troop Square. We invite you to join us Sundays at 11 a.m. in person or via live stream on Zoom. You can find the Zoom link and more about Unitarian Universalism in Savannah at our website, uusavannah.org. We hope you enjoy today's program.
Greetings to my good-hearted, generous, green thumb, girly pops. I welcome you as one of your own. Welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Church of Savannah, the home of liberal religion here in the hostess city. My name is Jessica Levitt-Watara, and I will serve as our worship associate today. We have the pleasure of our anti-racism committee, known to those in the know as ARC, making service today. They are led by Yvette Upton, who will be giving our message. Our called minister, Reverend Lisa Day, is still in recovery from a couple of eye surgeries that she's had recently. Our worship, religious education, and covenant group theme for May is Awakening Curiosity. Jess Swanson will read our story for all ages, and Tracy Martinson will provide our Love at the Center moment. Here at the UU Church of Savannah, we are working to build a diverse, multicultural, and beloved community. We celebrate the presence and participation of people of all races, genders, sexual orientations, abilities, and ethnic and national origins. We warmly welcome you on YouTube, hi friends, or on site, whoever you know yourself to be, and wherever you are on your journey. As part of our commitment to accessibility, we do use microphones whenever anyone speaks so that everyone in the sanctuary and watching on YouTube can hear us. If you are visiting this morning and you'd like to introduce yourself, Gail has a microphone and she will bring it to you to say your name and where you're visiting us from. Anyone on this side of the congregation visiting today who'd like to introduce themselves? Okay, I see. Oh, we've got one. Gail's coming right around.
I'm hurrying.
Yeah, good morning. My name is Mark. I'm Jess's dad, and I'm visiting from Thomasville, Georgia. But this is actually, I think, my third visit. So it's a pleasure to be here.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Okay. And do we have any visitors on this side who would like to introduce themselves to us today? Great. We have one right here. Gail's going to swing right around.
Hi, my name is Katie. This is my husband, Josh, and we just recently moved here from San Antonio, Texas.
Welcome. Well, great to have you all with us, whether this is the first time, your 10th time, your 100th time, your 1,000th time. I got to figure out how many times I've been here because I think that'd be fun to add in, right? If you're looking for a new faith community, we do invite you to visit several times to get a feel for our worship style and approach to matters of faith and religion. And we also have coffee time after the service. So if you'd like to join us for that, we'd love to have you. You can go out the front door and kind of make a circle, or you can go out the side door down the ramp and there'll be coffee. And I think I saw cupcakes. Oh yeah, I saw cupcakes. After the story for all ages and the offering, we sing short responses. The lyrics are printed in the order of service, so I don't want anyone to feel lost, up, down, Catholic vibes, right? So it's confusing for me sometimes. So there, if you have your order of service, everything is in there to easily follow along. We do have a couple of cards in our pew back as well. The yellow card is for anyone who is visiting today. You can either scan the QR code on the back, which will get you access to our newsletter and a welcome letter from our minister, or you can fill it out by hand if you're old school and you toss it into the offering plate. We also have our red heart and chalice card that says joys and sorrows on it. If you have a joy or a sorrow that you'd like to either be shared in service or given to our pastoral care committee, fill out this card and again, pop it in the offering plate. Church announcements are emailed to members and friends on Tuesdays and Fridays, and you can check your email for more things that we have going on. Two points that I want to bring up is next Sunday, June 7, we have a multi-generational service, and it's going to be our flower ceremony. I know this is one that everyone always enjoys. Please bring a flower to church with you, preferably one for each person that's attending with you, to contribute to the bouquet that we make annually that symbolizes the beauty and possibility of our congregation. Please also make a plan to stay after church for our congregational meeting. We do need to have a quorum to approve our budget and our slate of officers, which you should have received in your email, as well as if you can't be here with us next week, you can do your absentee ballot. And I was shared an announcement from Yvette and ARC that the Georgia General Assembly is going back into session on June 17th. Governor Kemp ordered a special legislative session to redraw election maps after SCOTUS ruled last month in Louisiana versus Kalis that a new majority black legislative district in Louisiana was unconstitutional. So please join State Representative Ann Allen Westbrook tomorrow, June 1st, at the Bull Street Library, 5:30 p.m., to discuss plans and potential outcomes of this special session. We now move into our worship together with our lighting of our chalice. I'll invite Caitlin McCray and Amelia Upton.
So we have a little sub-subject called belonging. ARC is not just about division, but belonging, I might say. I also want to give a shout-out to our people behind the curtain up in audiovisual land. Everybody, if you can just turn around for a moment. It's pretty amazing. We kind of keep it together. It started during the pandemic, as we know, and it's still going strong, so that's great. Bell Hooks comes to us and talks about belonging. She calls it something that I can't read. I can't remember the name. We can rest our hope in the world that transcends race by building communities where self-esteem comes from not feeling superior to any group, but from one's relationship to the land, to the people, to the place, wherever that may be. When we create beloved community environments that are anti-racist and inclusive, it need not matter whether these spaces are diverse. What matters is that difference can enter the world of our beloved community and find a place of welcome and a place to belong. So, love the one you're with and invite more in.
Good morning. Black clergy from across denominations returned to Selma, Alabama recently, as we are once again called to bear witness to the entrenched racism, fear, and violence in the United States. Actions by the U.S. Supreme Court and elsewhere in our government have laid bare once again the depths of anti-black sentiment that is so pervasive in this country. It was an honor, shared Reverend Dr. Sophia Bentecor, President of the Unitarian Universalist Association, to join in worship and witness with so many people of faith as we came together to say, never again. At the rally, she proclaimed, "We were made for these times. Let us continue to claim our power together in coalition and undertake every faithful action until the full protections of the Voting Rights Act are restored. Come, let us worship together. Now, if you will join us in opening.
Story for all ages. So anyone who'd like to see the pictures can join Jess and crew up front.
Thank you for being such good listeners. See you later.
Tracy Martinson Bathfield, and I actually wasn't going to do a Love at the Center testimonial because I really dislike public speaking a lot, but the universe is giving me all sorts of opportunities to expand my comfort zone, so here I am. I want to thank Yvette for factoring in a little extra time in the service for me. One of the other reasons I wasn't going to do this is that my wife Vanessa and I are at a crossroads with our relationship with this church. I would very much like to say that this church is a source for love at the center of our lives, but unfortunately at this time I can't. I know many of my fellow congregants were at that same crossroads. Often when humans fail me, I look to nature or history. It's not meant to belittle my current dilemma, situation, or heartache, but to help me find some peace and perspective, to help me find hope and a positive path forward. In this case, I look to this church building itself. This sanctuary has been cradling searching souls through slavery, the Civil War, both world wars, too many other wars, and police actions, women's suffrage, McCarthyism, and the civil rights movement. As the Anti-Racism Committee is speaking today, it's significant to note that this building itself had to be moved after the Unitarians that built it originally sold it. The city of Savannah didn't want a black church on Oglethorpe Square, so it got moved here by the new congregation. That took a lot of commitment and love. It also reminds us that the voice of liberal religion in the Deep South is not a given, and that we, as the current stewards of this church, have a responsibility to make often hard and uncomfortable choices to ensure its longevity. In my search for inspiration for love at the center of our church today, I found mine in what is before us each time we enter this sanctuary. But I'm not sure we see it anymore. This stained glass art piece behind me reminded me of the promise of UU in general and this church specifically. It was unveiled 18 years ago. If you don't know, there was a call for the designs that incorporate symbols of major world religions to represent the inclusivity of different views and ideologies in UU. Of the over 30 submissions, this one that was designed by member Phil Hemby was chosen by the congregation. There is not just one way to spirituality, one way to love. I Googled what each one of these faiths say about love. Given the origins of my personal religious experience, Christianity was the most familiar to me. 1 Corinthians 13 is probably the most famous quoted verse of the Bible on love, summarizing at the end, "And now abideth faith, hope, love, these three, but the greatest of these is love." In Judaism, love is viewed as an active, conscious choice rather than a passive emotion. I've reached the age where death isn't just touching my life through previous generations, but now more often in my own generation. The poem Epitaph by Merritt Malloy has been adopted in Reformed Jewish liturgy as a meditation before Mornish Kaddish. It ends with, "Love doesn't die, people do. So when all that's left of me is love, give me away." Taoism emphasizes unconditional love, aligning relationships with the flow of the Tao, letting go of expectations, self-interest, and attachment to outcomes. In Islam, love is viewed as a sacred gift from Allah designed to foster peace and tranquility, emphasizing affection, compassion, and commitment. While humanists see love as a human experience and not a divine command, and is often guided by empathy and the golden rule, acting with integrity, fairness, and accountability. Paganism views love as a sacred natural force that flows through all of life, emphasizing connection rather than a strict moral rule. In Hinduism, love is considered the highest, most natural emotion, grounded in duty and selfless service. In Hinduism, love is considered the highest, most... And my man Buddha spoke of love as action. It's not just an emotion, but an active practice of kindness that fosters joy rather than demanding perfection. A couple of weeks ago, after the budget roundtable, when expressing my concerns about the current state of the church, one of the members kept asking me, "What do you want? What do you want?" I actually don't have an attachment to a specific outcome. I think it is our collective responsibility to find a way forward, framed in the ethics, fairness, and compassion that for me define Unitarian Universalism. But I do know that we aren't going to get back to love at the center of this church community by hope or faith, or by ignoring the schism and merrily rolling along as if it doesn't exist, or from the pulpit glibly dismissing real concerns of some congregants with lyrics to a Rolling Stones song. Sometimes what you want is indeed what you need. Our roadmap glows in front of us every time we gather. The crossroads I spoke of in the beginning for my wife and I is to believe that this church is worth fighting for, or simply walk away. Love is a conscious choice. Pretty much every day, my wife or I will look at each other and say, "Will you marry me?" It is a daily choice. Love is action. I can, without reservation, say that my commitment to the covenant of the church and the ideals of UU remain as strong as ever. With a servant's heart, I make a commitment to do what I can to help heal this community and have it not just be a source of love at the center of Vanessa in my life, but for all who enter, and not just the ones who I find easy to get along with and share the same opinions as me. I came here specifically to support me, standing up here today, but the ones who rolled their eyes and shifted in their seats a little bit as I walked to the pulpit, the ones oblivious to me entirely, the ones who fall in the middle of all those extremes, all who enter. It is my great hope that each of you will find your own entry point on the road back behind me to do the same. Tomorrow starts a new month, and Soul Matters' theme is flourishing together. One of the exercises uses a quote from Henri Nouwen: "Community is a place where the person you least want to live with always lives." His essay actually goes on to say that person is always in your community somewhere. In the eyes of others, you might be that person. And Nouwen furthers, "Sometimes you don't feel much love, and that's hard, but we can be faithful. We can build a home together and create a space for the sacred." Flourishing together is an appropriate stepping stone to move forward with courage, with the courage of action and humility and forgiveness. If, as a community, we want to declare that every person is inherently worthy and has the right to flourish with dignity, love, and compassion outside these walls, then we must choose actively to live it with each other within them. I was going to end by quoting one of my favorite Elvis Costello songs, What's So Funny About Peace, Love, and Understanding? But I found a song that was co-written by Natalie Hemby from the High Women. I have no idea if there's any relationship to our roadmap designer, Phil, but the coincidence was too perfect to ignore, and it reflects closer to the answer to the question repeatedly asked me the other night, what do you want? And I want to thank Becca for putting her voice to it. I want to live with a crowded table and a place by the fire for everyone. Let us take on the world while we're young and able, and bring us back together when the day is done. The door is always open, your picture's on my wall. Everyone's a little broken, and everyone belongs. Yeah, everyone belongs.
For our invitation to generosity, I wanted to share some words from Joe Van Roo. In our world, many voices are silenced. Many truths remain unspoken because the speaker fears rejection, judgment, or worse. Our financial offerings today help sustain this congregation as we work to make this a place where all voices can be heard, where truth can be spoken without fear, where vulnerability is met with compassion. We give in gratitude for this beloved community and with hope for a world where more voices can speak their truth. To donate via debit or credit card, please use the QR code on the back of the order of service. You can also go to our website, uusavannah.org, to click the donate button. Mailed checks are always welcome. Our offering will now be gratefully received. Thank you for your generosity.
Back together. us back together when the day is done. When the day is done.
With each other. Today I have a joy from Evelina who shared with me. This week I learned that there are countries in the world where women are barred from singing in public. Especially knowing this has made me so grateful for our church choir and my choir mates. Let us embrace our liberty and truly lift every voice and sing. P.S. Special appreciation to Becca, our music director, too. Let us hold all our joys and sorrows, spoken and unspoken, in our hearts as we join together in the responsive reading printed in your order of service. Sorrow is everywhere.
Yet joy is everywhere.
As we mourn together,
so we celebrate together.
And offer thanks,
that we are not alone.
So may it be, now and in all the days to come. I'd like you to take a second, take a deep breath, get settled into your seat as we start our meditation. These words came from Lore Stevens. We're going to do a body scan meditation today. So I invite you to close your eyes if that feels comfortable. Let them rest low, however you wish. I invite you to settle deeper into your body, into this moment. Focus your attention on the parts of your body that are closest to the earth. Scan your attention slowly upwards, from feet to ankles, calves, knees, thighs, trunk, arm, shoulder, neck, and head. Focus your attention in the center of the body, where air becomes breath, where what is not you becomes you, where the line blurs in a flow without ceasing. Scan your attention slowly upwards. Focus your attention at the top of the body, where feeling becomes thought, and thought becomes action, and action begins to change the world. Now that we have enjoyed the quiet, connected to our bodies, and noticed how connected to the world around us we are, May we remember that connection with every breath. Amen, amen, namaste.
Be the change you want to see in the world. Be the change you want to see in the world. Be the change you want to see in the world. And change will come to you.
Okay. This is not my comfort zone either. But I am so proud to be a member of this, the anti-racism committee. So, good morning.
Good morning.
I am Louise Frazier, longtime member of the anti-racism committee here at the UUCS. Well, anti-racism work has been going on in various forms for many years at our church. The Anti-Racism Committee, which is also known as ARC, was formally commissioned by the Board of Trustees on June 11, 2020, after a unanimous vote by the congregation. Our mission is to help the church evolve into a fully inclusive, anti-racist, multicultural organization. Since its establishment, UUCS has adopted the eighth principle, becoming the 45th of now 290 UU congregations to do so. The eighth principle states, journeying, toward spiritual wholeness by working to build a diverse, multicultural, beloved community by our actions that accountably dismantle racism and other oppression in ourselves and our institutions. ARC has assessed the current state of our church, conducted programs and trainings, created an anti-racism library in Ron Hall, added garden flags that highlight our church's commitment to social justice and anti-racism, and raised funds and awareness of local issues such as migrant equity Southeast. We also recommend the removal of the Pierpont artwork in the vestibule, which will be documented in our church history, and it will be replaced with a more inclusive art. And to welcome members and guests to our sanctuary. In 2014 survey, we found that 78% of our congregation thinks UCS working to dismantle racism and other oppression in the church and in the community is very important. And 92% of the congregation selected that it's very important to worship in a church community that is working towards racial equity. ARC functions as a working group, and we invite the entire UUCS community to collaborate with us in identifying the steps to take as a congregation to engage in active racial equality. Our mission complements the social justice team who focuses on outreach in our broader Savannah community. ARC primarily focuses on the internal work within our church. Current ARC members include Chris Carroll, Louise Frazier, Caitlin McCrae, Jessica Swanson, and Yvette Upton. Past members include Joseph DeSerrano, Jan Elders. We miss our Jan Elders. Lorraine LaFiere, Bill Huffman, Dorothy Holmes, Jane Rago, Judy Saucerman, and Margie Thompson. And new members are always welcome. For my second reading, it's a poem by Langston Hughes. This is one of my very favorite poems of all time. Langston Hughes, besides being a poet, was an activist, novelist, playwright, and columnist from Joplin, Missouri. He is known as a leader of the Harlem Renaissance. And in my mind, he really nails it with this poem. It's called Dreams. Hold fast to dreams, for if dreams die, life is a broken-winged bird that cannot fly. Hold fast to dreams, for when dreams go, life is a barren field frozen with snow. Now, I don't know if Paul McCartney had this poem in mind in 1968 when he wrote the song Blackbird, but he said he had heard about the Little Rock Nine incident and wanted to respond to what young black women were going through during the civil rights movement. Blackbird singing in the dead of night, take these broken wings and learn to fly. All your life, you were only waiting for this moment to arise. In conclusion, I believe that civil rights empower us all. So, hold fast to your dreams, beloved community, and learn to fly.
Will you please rise in body or spirit and join us in hymn number 149, Lift Every Voice.
Rejoicing, rise.
Thank you, Louise, for the stool, for the step. I'm curious, and maybe you are too. I'm curious about the possibility of a world where our actions and systems are all based on love and respect for the dignity and worth of all people. Imagine our country, our communities, our families, our church. I'm curious what that world would look like to you. The closest I can imagine to such a world is to consider a moment in time when I felt I truly belonged. Recently, Sandy Mucci said in her Love at the Center moment that she felt called to this place, to this church, when we all joined hands in saying "We Shall Overcome" at the annual MLK concert. I was so moved by her story. It resonated deeply with me. Attending an MLK concert was also my first experience at UU Savannah. I remember sitting in a packed multicultural gathering honoring the late Dr. King, where we also sang "We Shall Overcome," and I listened to beautiful voices share hope in a time of fear in our country. It was January 2017, the beginning of Trump's first term. The minister spoke briefly of UUs who had marched in the civil rights movement and the two who were murdered in Selma, Alabama in 1965, Reverend James Reeve and Viola Leoso. I knew who they were from my own academic research of the civil rights movement, but I hadn't remembered they were Unitarian Universalists. I, like Sandy, felt called to this church, as was my mother-in-law, who was with me at the concert. Almost a decade later, here we are, along with her partner and my daughter, as members, still hoping to find that elusive experience from that very first concert. That's my personal vision for beloved community, but I'm curious about yours. What does it mean to be part of a beloved community? Black feminist scholar Bell Hooks, who we heard from earlier, said, "Beloved community is not formed by the eradication of difference, but by its affirmation, by each of us claiming the identities and cultural legacies that shape who we are and how we live in the world." And she notes that difference need not be present, but would be welcome if it were. Consider a moment, if you can, of when you felt you truly belonged. Maybe it was here in UUCS or another group or community. Maybe it was with your family of origin or your chosen family. Maybe you are still looking. I'm curious, what about that experience made you feel like you belonged? Or what would make you feel like you belong? Did you feel valued and respected? Were you emotionally or physically safe? Perhaps you felt seen for who you were, not having to hide or downplay parts of your identity. Maybe you found that expectations were clear and you were treated equitably. Maybe you even felt like if you made a mistake, there would be a compassionate response. I'm curious if you found it challenging to think of times when you felt such a deep sense of belonging. I know for me, I can think of far more instances where I did not feel that way. The Anti-Racism Committee's mission is to help guide our church toward beloved community. Our focus is more inward, while the social justice team does incredible outreach in our broader community. But this task to create belonging, to create beloved belonging, to create beloved community falls to all of us, from the minister and the board, ARC and social justice, religious education and music, covenant groups and members alike. My dear friend Ellie DeLappi, a lifelong social justice advocate, recently posted, "If we have the privilege, the platform, or the power, then our responsibility is clear: to challenge inequity, disrupt injustice, and build systems that truly work for us all." When we think about racism and other oppressions, we often think of individual actions or beliefs. We may think, "I'm not racist because I don't do or think those things." But the truth is, we all participate in systems that were purposely built not to be inclusive or equitable to all, And we participate in them even if we don't agree or don't want to, because they exist at the societal level. Privileges that we may have been born into because of the color of our skin, our family's class status, our sexual orientation or ability level, our citizenship status, and so on. And then we perpetuate them as norms in smaller local levels, even within our own faith. We, myself included, prefer to look outside to other people, regions, political parties, to challenge or at least talk about on social media. But we must be vigilant in our own spaces too, and not because we are intentionally harming others, but because we don't want to intentionally harm others. Beloved community takes work. UU member Gretchen Maun stated, "For those of us to truly put love at the center, it's more important than ever that our congregations and our buildings be a sanctuary of radical welcome for all." Beloved community does not come only from singing and gathering together, or even from coffee hours or game nights, or Rocky Horror, as uplifting as they are. Beloved community also needs intentional, fairly structured, and fairly implemented systems to ensure equity. Creating beloved community means welcoming all and having expectations for how we treat each other. It means holding each other accountable, lovingly, compassionately. I'm curious how well we do this. It's so much easier to ignore behaviors that are harmful to others, to be polite, to smooth things over. It's not easy to address them. While our anti-racism committee centers racial justice as our primary focus, and there is so much to be said and done, today at the beginning of Pride Month, I want us to consider an intersecting oppression. Like many, I have been challenged by the dismissal of one of our members. Not because of the reported behavior, which needed to be addressed, but because it seems we didn't follow our own policies to remove someone permanently from our community. Having and following fair and equitable processes ensures accountability in a thoughtful, intentional way that can bring a community together, even when the situation is hard, complicated, and uncomfortable. Especially when a situation is hard, complicated, and uncomfortable. At a time nationally where we are seeing rights stripped away unethically at a rapid pace, this action in our own community hits differently. For lesbian members of our church and others with marginalized identities, this dismissal may raise fears about their own security, about their own place in our church. There are members within our congregation who have been rejected by churches, neighbors, friends, and even family members because of homophobia. When someone of a similar identity is dismissed from our church without an opportunity to present their side, it not only goes against the values of our faith, it causes harm for those who have been rejected from spaces and people who should have been safe. Again, this is not to say whether or not the member should have been dismissed. Accusations of inappropriate behavior must always be taken seriously, and the accused individual should still be treated with someone of dignity and worth, as should the person who reports a violation. This is to point out the harm caused by the decision-making itself. Yet I have no doubt, that the caring, dedicated volunteers on our board acted in that moment in good faith to prevent further harm to someone who felt violated. In my professional life, I have served as a victim advocate in many similar scenarios, including where the victim was not believed or felt re-traumatized by the system, by the process. These are difficult situations. Yet in building beloved community, we cannot think only of our intent. We must also prioritize impact in a loving and compassionate way. Like many of you, I care about people on every side of this issue, from the person who felt violated, to the person who felt wrongfully dismissed, to the board who faced a tough situation, to leaders and members who felt the matter was not handled fairly. I am curious, and you may be as well, how do we regain trust as a congregation when there are so many perspectives and for some so much pain around this issue? How do we build a congregation that is both loving and accountable? How do we continue on our path to build the beloved community to which we aspire? I am hopeful that we can get through this, but only if we commit to the work. Fortunately, the first step is already in progress. To listen to concerns, to share information, to have a space to process. I'm grateful for the work of the Healthy Congregations team. I appreciated the listening session I attended. I personally felt heard, and I gained new perspective from other members and from board members present. I think others did too. Having spaces to process is important for healing. The next step, though, is harder. Healing also requires repairing harm. It's difficult not to be defensive or dismissive. I have been challenged by friends and colleagues when I have said or done something that has caused harm. I will not pretend that I have always handled it well. I will not pretend that I have ever handled it well. Enough of you know me to probably know that, but it has always impacted me deeply and changed my perspective going forward. In these moments, we have to consider what harm has been caused, intentional or not. How do we make amends? Conflict is challenging. In this case, repair may be needed on multiple levels, from the individuals directly involved to members of the broader congregation. What this looks like still needs to be determined and enacted. The third step, which cannot be overlooked, is to take intentional actions to address behaviors, policies, or practices to minimize the possibility that this type of issue will resurface, or when it does, that we are better prepared to handle it in the future. We must not only address an individual incident when it happens, but look to improving our policies and procedures to minimize the risk of harm in the future. In similar cases, we must ensure the safety and well-being of individuals and the community while also holding people accountable for their actions and clearly defined processes that are faithfully implemented. The Healthy Congregations team held multiple listening sessions with members over the past few months, and I understand that they are currently preparing a report with recommendations about how we can move forward to rebuild trust. When this report is released this summer, I hope that it will be well received by the board and the congregation alike, and that we will move forward with their recommendations. I personally have many thoughts about the situation and the next steps, but that's not my point today. My message is that we must muddle through the hard stuff together, not ignore it, not smooth it over. This report will contain the perspectives and recommendations of the vast majority of active members. I'm proud of their team's work and of the members who took the time to attend and share, of the board members who listened before sharing their own perspectives, and I look forward to helping where I can to support these next steps, and I hope that you will too. There are so many injustices happening in our world, in our country, and in our community. While we challenge mass deportations and inhumane incarcerations, the dismantling of the Voting Rights Act, the criminalization of women's reproductive rights and trans identities, let us recommit to building beloved community right here in this space together. May it be so.
This is Reverend Lisa Day. I hope you've enjoyed this program from the Unitarian Universalist Church of Savannah. Please join us at one of our services sometime soon at our church on Troop Square or live on Zoom. We're the beacon of liberal religion in Savannah, and you can find out more at uusavannah.org. We meet on Sundays at 11 a.m. Thanks for listening.